From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. The story sent shockwaves all across California yesterday. State Senator Leland Yee indicted for alleged crimes that include arms trafficking. A 137-page affidavit details Yee's alleged misdeeds that range from the sleazy to the scary, from trading favors in return for secret campaign cash to being willing to arrange illegal arms shipments. Yee was indicted on 7 separate counts yesterday, each of which carry a potential 20-year prison term. In the hour ahead, we'll provide the latest developments in the story and its still unfolding consequences. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. With stunning swiftness, the long political career of Leland Yee came tumbling down yesterday, handcuffed and hauled into court to face 7 different criminal charges. They include allegedly receiving $6,800 in return for providing a proclamation honoring a fraternal organization with alleged ties to Chinatown gangs, taking in over $20,000 for arranging a meeting between other lawmakers and an undercover agent posing as a businessman with interests in medicinal marijuana, and perhaps most spectacularly, allegedly offering to arrange meetings with an undercover agent and an arms dealer in return for yet more campaign cash. In this hour of Forum, we're going to take you through this strange saga that not only involves a state senator, but someone named Raymond Chow, a man with longtime ties to organized crime in Chinatown, and someone named Keith Jackson, a well-known political consultant and one-time San Francisco school board member, both of whom face extensive criminal charges as well. Joining us to help us go through this complex and fascinating, intriguing story. Scott Detrow, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED News, who's been covering this story the last 24 hours. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us as well, Marisa Lagos. She is a political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, also knee-deep in covering the story. Marisa, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
And Nathan Halverson joins us as well. He's a reporter with the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California, Berkeley, and has been working on an upcoming PBS Frontline program that takes a look at, among other things, U.S. casinos operating in Macau, China. Was at a dinner that included Raymond Chow last week. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Scott, this is such an interesting and fascinating story. Let's sort of walk our way through the best we can. And let's just take, for starters, what happened in court yesterday when State Senator Yee was brought in. The charges, I outlined some of them, but give us in a nutshell the extent of the charges and what he now is facing.
Sure. Well, Yee was one of 26 different people charged with crimes yesterday, and he's just one small part of a sprawling FBI investigation that touches on drug trafficking, that touches on bribery, that even touches on a murder-for-hire scheme. But where Senator Yee is involved is that he was allegedly involved in quid pro quo deals with undercover FBI agents. Of course, he did not know they were FBI agents, where they were offering him campaign contributions and cash, you know, thousands of dollars in cash for a wide range of political favors ranging from, like you mentioned, you know, a Senate proclamation honoring their group to facilitating meetings with lawmakers to discuss medical marijuana legislation to, most stunningly, this whole other scope of allegations where in exchange for campaign contributions, Yee was allegedly offering to hook these agents up with an international arms dealer who is going to smuggle hundreds of assault weapons into the United States from the Philippines, which is just ridiculous when you say it out loud. But you have pages of conversations between Yee and the undercover agents where they're asking about the feasibility of him getting, you know, shoulder-fired missiles for them. And he's talking about the danger of going over to the Philippines and getting these weapons. And to top that all off, this is a lawmaker who spent the last few years aggressively pushing for gun control legislation in California. He authored several gun control bills. He was part of the Senate Democratic group that really made a big push after the Newtown tragedy to tighten California gun control laws. So here are these allegations that as he's trying to, you know, reduce the number of bullets you can have in a magazine and things like that, that he's offering to ship hundreds of assault weapons into the country. I mean, It's beyond belief.
It truly is. I don't know if you had this experience in reading through the 137-page affidavit, but you turn each page and you think, oh, this is extraordinary. And then you turn the next page and it gets more extraordinary and it goes on and on. So let's begin to piece through the players that are involved in all this, because as you suggest, Scott, Senator Yee, though central, of course, in our major focus in this hour of forum, is only part of how this whole story came together. So Marisa Lagos, give us a sort of snapshot of a couple of these other key characters. Let's begin with, and Nate Halverson, join in on this as well, with Raymond Chow. What happened, as I understand how this began to unfold, is that an agent infiltrated Raymond Chow's organization. And it was then through that process that Raymond Chow, in turn, introduced that undercover agent to this man named Keith Jackson. So pick it up from there.
Yeah. And I mean, to even go back further than that, you know, Chow is sort of a well-known Chinatown gangster. He was indicted and charged by the feds over 10 years ago and ended up cutting a deal to testify against some folks, has been out and has been wearing an ankle monitor this whole time, and has spent really the last decade trying to convince everyone in Chinatown, in Sacramento, in City Hall, that he's on the straight and narrow. I mean, he's produced videos telling, you know, kids to stay on the straight and narrow. The Yee Proclamation, while it's the only one we know of that was done in exchange for money, is not the only time that politicians up to the level of Dianne Feinstein in the Senate have honored him. So
no, you see, I mean, his Facebook photo is a picture with he and Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. He has, yeah. Nate Halverson, he has proclamations from Dianne Feinstein, from Tom Amiano. I mean, this guy has quite the honor roll of people apparently in his corner. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I attended the Tong's annual gala on Friday night, and that was attended by dignitaries from Vietnam, from China. It included members of the Gang Task Force. There were federal agents there.
They
were
not undercover. They're there.
Invited by Chow. Very openly.
And meanwhile, all this other thing is going on.
And
so
I mean, it's incredible.
It
I mean, the indictment sort of opens with 5 years ago when these two agents, undercover agents, met Chow, and sitting in a karaoke bar with one of them as he told them, I'm not involved in criminal activity anymore. I just oversee all of it for the Tong. And so he has, you know, I don't know if we have even time to get through all the things that they're alleging Chow did, but it's a long list of money laundering and drug-related charges and violent acts that he is in some way related to and has to do with about 20 of the other suspects. And then there's Keith Jackson.
We'll hear more about the whole Raymond Chow saga. Nate, you can fill us in even more on that. But let's get to Keith Jackson, because he is the link between Raymond Chow and Leland Yee.
Yeah, and the allegations against him in some ways are the most incredible. I mean, he was a former school board member in San Francisco. He's well-known in consultant groups. He's worked for Lennar Corporation over the years on the Hunters Point Project, worked with Sam Singer, one of the most well-known crisis communications consultants. And it's not entirely clear how he and Leland Yee hooked up, but essentially in 2011, as Leland was running his campaign for mayor, and then after he lost trying to retire his campaign debt, which was about $70,000, Jackson took a lead role in trying to help him raise those funds. And really, Jackson seems to be the nexus between Chow and the Tong and all of these shady deals, sort of quid pro quo. He also pulled his son, 28-year-old son, in, one of their associates from Oakland, and those three men are involved in an alleged murder-for-hire scheme, which doesn't really seem like it was real, but
I mean, again, this gets sort of more fantastic as you go along. But let's just sort of try to see if we can kind of connect a few of the dots here. So we mentioned Tong for a moment. Nate, give us a quick definition of what that is before we go further about the Tong and what that represents in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, Tong is a Chinese word. It means home or gathering place. You can kind of think about it as an elk lodge or a Masonic temple in the Chinese community. But they actually have, you know, you'll also hear the word triad thrown around. And triad is typically sort of considered like a mafia. But it actually goes back historically to the overthrow of the Qing Dynasty. And the Tongs here in San Francisco actually helped overthrow the Qing Dynasty in 1911. So you also have to consider them in this sort of larger global geopolitical field.
So you have Raymond Chow, who is connected with all of this and his long criminal past. Someone infiltrates his organization. And then Chow introduces this undercover agent who's posing and part of now Raymond Chow's organization to Keith Jackson, Scott Detrow. And so let's now begin to make the links here, because Keith Jackson, as Marisa was describing, is someone who's raised money for Leland Yee in the past. And Leland Yee has at this point a significant debt from his run for mayor. And so that's part of what starts to happen. Is that right, Scott, that what's going on now is Jackson thinks he has a way to raise money by way of this what he doesn't know is an undercover agent, to make contributions that will help retire some of Leland Yee's debt.
That's right. And this begins with Jackson making the propositions to the undercover agents, asking for campaign contributions. Of course, there's nothing wrong with campaign contributions in face value, but right away this takes a step beyond that. First of all, Jackson is asking for contributions that are above the legal limit. And second of all, he begins making promises to these undercover agents, saying that Yee would be able to help them with official favors. And early in the affidavit, the favors mentioned include, you know, helping again with this proclamation being issued. But beyond that, helping Yee's being promised to make some phone calls to help get contracts approved that the agents supposedly have interests in. And then you get to these exchanges that begin happening around 2013. Where in exchange for $10,000 in cash, and then that goes up to $21,000 in cash over time, Yee promises to facilitate meetings with other lawmakers in order for these agents to talk about medical marijuana bills that they're supposedly interested in. And at that point, there's conversations. It seems like phones were tapped. The agents obviously were reporting back, where you have Yee directly making these promises, making these claims, and talking about kind of the exchange. And Yee's very careful several points, much like Ron Calderon was when you read through his affidavit, to say, look, we need to be careful about pay for play. We need to be careful about the idea that you give me money and I do you favors. And then, of course, turns around and does favors for the money right after that.
Let's go through each of these, or at least examples of each of the things that he's charged with. You mentioned the medicinal marijuana part of this, and so let's spend a moment on that. Then we'll come back to the arms question and some of the other favors that he did. Part of what's alleged in the affidavit, Scott, is that he was willing to meet or set up meetings between other lawmakers and another undercover agent who was posing as a businessman with interests in medicinal marijuana. Medicinal marijuana legislation might come up before the legislature. And there's this mysterious reference to Senators 1 and Senators 2. We don't know who they are, but that Yee set up meetings, right, between Senators 1 and 2 and this alleged businessman.
That's correct. And at least one of these meetings with, you know, so-called Senator 1 did happen in Sacramento. The link was made. Yee, the senator, and the agents go and meet. And actually, as Yee's walking over to the meeting, according to the affidavit, he says something along the lines of, hey, I'm running for Secretary of State. I hope I don't get indicted here. It's important to point out that on face value, a lawmaker meeting with a constituent of another lawmaker, there's nothing wrong with that. These types of meetings happen all the time. That's the way business is done in Sacramento. And there doesn't appear to be any indication that Senator One was aware of this or knew anything about it. But again, we don't know all the details. And this is now, I mentioned Calderon a minute ago, this is now the second FBI affidavit out there where other lawmakers are unnamed and the legislator promises to link them up and saying, look, I'm the conduit to this other, you know, more important lawmaker. And that just contributes to a major concern, especially among Democrats here in Sacramento, that you have a pattern here of multiple lawmakers taking bribes and other lawmakers looped in. So if I'm Senator 1, if I'm Senator 2, or if I'm the senators named in the other affidavit, let's call them A and B for these purposes, I'm probably very uncomfortable right now, even if I did nothing wrong, just because of the appearances and the links that you have to somebody who's now facing multiple federal charges.
Well, let's hear a little bit, if we can, from State Senator and Senate Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg yesterday, because it speaks to this whole question of the political fallout from this. And this is Senator Steinberg commenting on what he would like Senator Yee to do.
Leave. Don't burden your colleagues and this great institution with your troubles.
Daryl Steinberg speaking yesterday about what he would like Leland Yee to be. Marisa Lagos, I mean, you know, we shouldn't spend perhaps the bulk of our time here on the politics of all of this. But this is rippling out in ways that could have significant change for what happens in Sacramento.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing. I mean, if this had just been a complaint against Chow and his Chinatown associates, it certainly would have been fascinating and made news. But bringing in someone like Yee, who, you know, ran for mayor, has been a public servant since 1988. He was a school board member. He was a supervisor. He served in the assembly. He's been in the Senate. Now he's running for Secretary of State. It's really interesting. And it speaks to, you know, one of the things that fascinated me about the indictment was it really sort of painted a picture of an almost desperate politician, of somebody who looked, felt like they were coming to the end of their road, was probably pretty devastated about losing for mayor, and clearly spent way more money than he had taken in, and was really grasping at straws here. But, you know, Yee's never been an easy person to pin down, and he's been very independent for good or ill, and I think that this also speaks to maybe one of the reasons that he had an association with Chow. You know, Rose Pak is one of the most powerful players in Chinatown, and she and Leland Yee have never liked each other. And so, if you don't have associations with her or Pius Lee, who's another community leader, you got to find them somewhere. And in the last years, Yee has seemingly become closer and closer to Chow.
So pick it up from there on this part of the story, and then we'll get into the arms part, which is the most fascinating in some ways of all of this. But Nate Halverson, on describe Raymond Chow's connections, not only to Leland Yee, but what makes him so central to all of this.
Yeah, well, he's the dragon head of the Tong, which is the oldest fraternal organization in Chinatown. The Gi Kung Hung Moon Tong goes back 166 years, almost to the founding of the city, representing the Chinese-American community here. And his connections are wide. I mean, my understanding in talking with Chow and others is that he and Rose Pak don't get along. They've sort of long been at each other. There's an anecdote Raymond likes to tell about Rose Pak coming up to him after a function and yelling in his face and screaming at him and waving her finger in his face. You know, Rose Pak's got a pretty big personality. And Raymond just kind of putting his hands behind his back and just kind of taking it and waiting for it to kind of, you know, run its course. That said, you know, he's also well connected, though, to folks like Pius Lee and other pillars of the Chinese community who have very much accepted him and brought him back in after he was released from prison.
So what will be the ripples of all this story now within that community? Here was Raymond Chow putting himself forward as this reform person, getting commendations, Ed Lee saying, way to go for changing your life, Tom Amiano congratulating him, Dianne Feinstein, so forth and so on. What does this mean for how things will now function in that community?
Yeah, that's a great question. There were a lot of long faces yesterday. I visited the Tong after the raid. I went up and I saw it. They had been working for a couple years now or longer on taking these historic documents they have of Sun Yat-sen, who's the George Washington of China, who helped establish the Republic of China in 1911. And he worked out of the Tong that Chow ran. And so they had been putting together these 100-year-old letters. They had this 100-year-old safe of his up there. And that had been a big deal for them. And now they kind of feel like that's been tainted. You know, at the same time, the police during their raid yesterday destroyed Sun Yat-sen's safe. I mean, this is something that belonged in a museum and that the Tong was working to get into a museum. They have grand aspirations of turning the Tong into a museum, of turning it into a place where people who visit Chinatown can come and see Chinatown's connection to China, to the foundations of China. So, yeah, there were a lot of long faces yesterday.
So the ripples of this story, I mean, are really all over. They're all over the city. They're all over Chinatown. And, of course, they're all over Sacramento as well. Let's spend a little bit of time before we come to our break about the sort of darker, I guess, part of this story, Scott Detrow, and that's the arms trafficking part of this. So again, we have this situation where Leland Yee wants campaign cash to retire his mayoral debt, but also raise cash for his run for Secretary of State. Keith Jackson is involved in helping him meet with various people who are going to give him money for a certain quid pro quo. And the strangest, most bizarre quid pro quo of all is, give me your campaign cash and I'll hook you up with an arms dealer. Pick it up from there,
right,
Scott.
And it's important to point out that these meetings here all took place within the last few months. These are January 2014, February 2014 meetings. The last meeting where Yee and these agents were discussing these arms deals happened just a few weeks ago. And I'm going to read some of the quotes here that the agents say that Yee told them during their meetings. He says that this international arms dealer has things that you guys want. Yee tells them he's going to rely on me because ultimately it's going to be me. And then here's the quote that I think most articles, including mine, led with. Yee says at one point to these agents, you know, the conversation is we'll give you campaign contributions and you'll help facilitate these arms that we're trying to bring in through the port of Newark to get into the country. Yee says, allegedly, do I think we can make some money? I think we can make some money. Do I think we can get the goods? I think we can get the goods. And then this conversation launches that has these weird tones, especially, as I mentioned, coming from a man who's been pushing for gun control measures, where the agents ask, you know, what kind of weapons can you get us? And Yee says, you know, we have weapons that are basically like, you know, M16 style assault weapons. And there's a conversation about where can we sell them. And Yee advises that, you know, Africa is really an untapped market to move these goods. And there's a conversation about do we go to the Philippines to get them? Do we smuggle them in through the port of Newark? Again, it's like mob movie type conversations that are happening with the state senator and undercover FBI agents. And like you said, that was something that everybody immediately their eyes went to when this document was unsealed yesterday afternoon. And Senator Steinberg said he was just shocked. He had nothing else to say beyond just absolute shock.
Well, let me ask that question because you can't help but, you know, now think of the old line, I'm shocked that this could possibly be
right,
happening.
Right,
but,
right.
I mean, are people really shocked,
yeah.
Marisa Lagos? I mean, or is there sort of this, you know, this sense that Leland Yee was sort of playing fast and loose all along?
I think both. Okay. I think that there's always been rumors and innuendo and suspicion that Leland maybe wasn't completely on the up and up. But the level to which and the details, the arms stuff, particularly given his history as not just a proponent of gun control laws, but of open government laws. I mean, he's the one that took on the UC system over executive pay. He's gone after violent video game makers. I mean, this is a man who's really staked his mark being about transparency and safety. And so I think that, I mean, for someone who's been at the Chronicle, you know, during his many runs, it's interesting. During the mayor's race, there was a lot of allegations by his opponents that, oh, there's something shady. You know, if you're to believe the complaint, little did we know that it was happening now, not 10 or 20 years ago. So I do think that there is genuine shock. I know many people who have worked for him over the years, and they seem to have been completely in the dark. And I've talked to other lawmakers who said, you know, this is a man who didn't have a cell phone for years, who didn't ever email anything, whose staff didn't always know where he was.
And we're just finding out where he may have been and where things may go from here. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Marisa Lagos of the San Francisco Chronicle, Nate Halverson with the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California, Berkeley, and Scott Detrow, our Sacramento Bureau Chief at KQED. And we welcome your calls as well. If you want some help in trying to sort out this saga, we will do our best to do just that. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in today for Michael Krasny. Our story is the story that everyone is talking about this morning, the indictment of Leland Yee and 25 other individuals on a wide variety of charges. We're walking through the story with Scott Detrow, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED, Marisa Lagos, political reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Nate Halverson, a reporter with the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California, Berkeley. And we should in all fairness, always remind ourselves that we have to use the word alleged in all of this. And of course, as Colin writes to us, an indictment is not the same thing as charges having been proved beyond a reasonable doubt, whatever happened to due process. Fair enough, Colin. Pardon?
It's not an indictment. It's a complaint. Charges have been filed, but be clear about that too.
But I think that's very fair to point out. There are some of the articles that I've been reading from the Bay Area newspapers have taken a very aggressive tone in their coverage. And these are allegations. It does remain to be seen what exactly occurred here. I've been following and Raymond Chow now for about a year, and he's given me very close access. And I can tell you in the affidavit, a lot of what they quote Raymond as saying is very much Raymond Chow. You know, he speaks broken English. He's a native Cantonese speaker. But he's long alleged his innocence and that he, although he brokers deal and he introduces people and he stays very well connected to the criminal elements, that he has gone legit, and he's maintained that strongly. So
duly noted. I mean, these are all
talking.
Yes, Scott, go ahead.
So I just want to point this out because we're kind of moving away from the gun section, and I wanted to mention this kind of qualifier when we were talking about these gun running conversations. As far as I can tell, there's no evidence in this complaint that Yee actually even had any connections or Yee actually even did anything, you know, involving these international arms dealers. He did make a lot of explicit promises. He did have a lot of conversations about what he could do to help facilitate these gun purchases. But I don't think there's any allegations about him actually, you know, making calls or making trips or actually setting things up. And I think that's really important to point out.
No, that's my reading as well, Scott, that he said he could do this. He was willing to do this. And that in itself, I guess, is a specific violation of the law. But we don't know what actually happened.
Well, and I think that brings up some questions about what the feds are after here. Are they trying to look for a deal from Yee? I mean, if they had wanted to, they obviously could have waited. This has been a 5-year investigation. I'm not sure why they decided to file this now. But, assumedly, they could have let this play out a little longer and seen if he actually had these connections. So maybe they don't think he did. Maybe they think that there are bigger fish to fry that these folks can help them catch. Who knows? So it'll be interesting to see how the actual court case plays out.
But on the question, while it's indeed true, these are all allegations, nothing yet has been proven in a court of law. On the political side of this, Scott Detrow, Daryl Steinberg isn't waiting around. I mean, and that's because of the context with which all of this happens, right? This is now, at a certain point, this starts to feel something other than an isolated incident and more like a trend.
Right. Yeah. Three is a trend, right? This is now the third lawmaker. You have Ron Calderon and Leland Yee in very similar circumstances of being the targets of these FBI investigations, allegedly being caught on tape, making promises, making deals, taking cash. You also have Roderick Wright, a Los Angeles Democratic state senator, who in a much different circumstance has been convicted for perjury, for fraud, for lying about where he lived when he ran for office. He lived outside his district. He said he lived in the district. He was recently convicted of that. And if you look at Daryl Steinberg's reaction to all of these cases, they've been very different. Ron Calderon, once that leaked affidavit came out with the allegations of the fake movie producers and all of the at that point crazy details. I think we might have surpassed that in terms of just shock at your initial read through a document. Steinberg initially moved to take Calderon off of his committees, but allowed him to remain an active senator. Once charges were filed, ultimately both Calderon and Wright were put on paid leave while they dealt with their legal problems. There had been a push from some Republicans to boot Roderick Wright out of the Senate after he was convicted, And Steinberg successfully pushed that back, saying, look, he has a right to remain until he's officially sentenced, and at that point he needs to step down. So I'm kind of going on here because we have three very different threads, but the point is you have three different lawmakers who are either facing federal charges or been convicted on felonies. And that puts the Senate Democrats and that puts Daryl Steinberg in a very bad spot. And in terms of policy implications, they are now below that two-thirds threshold that they had after the most recent elections that would have theoretically allowed Democrats to pass tax increases, to get constitutional amendments on the ballot without a single Republican vote. Now they need to do some bartering if they want to pass
right.
those two-thirds votes.
And we don't know yet where this story may go and how it may continue to unfold or who else may be involved. Let's hear what our listeners would like to hear about this story more. Susan, go ahead, please, in San Francisco.
Yes. Hi. I live actually right across the park from Leland Yee's home. And Eric Marr is my supervisor. And, of course, there were some concerns about Ed Lee and his decision to run for mayor suddenly when he had said he wasn't going to. I'm just wondering what the thought is about how much this might involve other Chinese leaders in San Francisco with ties to Chinatown.
Susan, thanks for the call. Ed Lee is one of those who gave a commendation to Raymond Chow, congratulating him for his, quote, willingness to give back to the community. Implications for Mayor Lee, Marisa?
I think that we kind of pointed out earlier, Leland Yee is sort of a lone wolf in a lot of ways. He's not close to a lot of the politicians that were just mentioned or the leaders that they're close with. So after yesterday, I'm never going to say anything definitively, but I would be shocked if this led to folks like Eric Marr or the mayor. Certainly there could be other questions raised about their connections with other people in Chinatown. But, as we sort of spoke about, Chow is not exactly in with the folks that the mayor really – who have the mayor's ear, like Rose Pack and Willie Brown.
Nate Halverson, how do you see that rippling out within Chinese-American politics?
Yeah, it's I think it is fairly divisive in the Chinese community. I think you have a Rose Pack side and I think you have a kind of a Pius Lee side. They've been, notoriously sort of at loggerheads over time and Raymond wasn't sort of in the Rose Pack camp. So whether or not this gets connected to her and to Mayor Ed Lee, will just have to remain to be seen, but it would be surprising.
Jimmy in Berkeley wants to join our conversation next. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this seems like more of a symptom than the actual problem. I mean, when you give people the power to rule over other people and then you allow for them to, have their services, their services paid through force and taxation, they're inevitably going to engage in behavior that's inappropriate. And I think we're seeing the real effects of that right now. I mean, Operation Fast and Furious with the gun running scandal that was going on with Eric Holder and all the blatant abuses of the Constitution, and the people who are pushing gun control harder than anyone else are the ones who are actually concealed carry permit holders themselves. It's all about creating this elite social class who are, the political ruling class who can have their rights, but the rest of us can't. And then they think they can get away with whatever they want. And it's an inherent symptom of the power structure and not actually – I mean, you can't go around blaming people like Leland Yee for what they do when you give them free evil to take – to take advantage of other people through government.
Jimmy, thanks. Thanks for the call. It's, it's hard to appropriate, of course, or allocate blame in some of these situations. And the agents in the indictment or in the affidavit, rather, Marisa, are careful to say at certain points, that Leland Yee sort of was not wanting to go forward. And yet, he keeps going forward.
He does. The agents also pushed a lot of stuff. I mean, I think that's important to note that they were very active in sort of wanting to make a clear, definitive link between these favors and the money with Keith Jackson and this murder for hire scheme. I mean, this was something that they seemed to dream up and sort of bring to Keith Jackson and his son and their affiliates. So
let's step back for a moment for people who are just hearing this for the first time and wondering, what is this now? So this is something else where the agents suggested or wondered how would you go about hiring someone to commit a murder? And Keith Jackson says what?
Essentially, that we can facilitate that for you. We know people. It'll take a few months. We need the name so that they can really do their research. But we can set up a murder for hire scheme.
And this is a former school board member.
A former school board member. This is, again, somebody with deep ties to the community.
I just have a question for a moment. Any of you maybe can answer is how does this all happen? I mean, do any of you know? I mean, presumably the agents must be wearing wires. Presumably Yi's phone lines are tapped. But they're also getting – Yi is writing letters on behalf of people who don't exist. I mean, someone right. Google it and figure that out?
It's
I mean, how does this
insane.
How does this happen?
It really is crazy, and I think that it speaks to how really Hollywood isn't all that far-fetched in a lot of situations. I mean, literally reading through this indictment is like a script, and I think that it speaks to – the sort of large number of people doing business through Sacramento. I mean, Scott, maybe you can speak to that a little more too. But, you know, it's not – it seems like they had just this fake marijuana interested party. And, Leland – and what about the contract that he allegedly helped push at the Department of Public Health for somebody, again, that didn't exist?
So, Scott, what are you hearing about that? Because it would seem like someone – this person comes to you and says, you know, I'm doing business here. Why don't you write me a letter and I'll give you $10,000 for your campaign? And he merrily writes the letter. I mean, doesn't someone check on this? Or did they create a fake website so that he would believe that these were actual businessmen? What are you hearing about that, Scott? Do you know?
Well, I think in terms of the details of this sting, this is still new enough that level of information hasn't trickled out yet. But going back to the Calderon FBI investigation, there was a lot of information about how the FBI agent who, you know, this was a couple scandals ago, so perhaps you forgot. I'll give you a quick refresher. This agent posed as an independent movie producer who was trying to get Ron Calderon to help him lower the threshold so that, you know, smaller budget films could qualify for tax benefits. And they actually – there was an IMDb page involved. There was a social media presence.
That's the film organization that represents or sets up things for producers and directors. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. When you want to know all the movies Al Pacino has gone to, IMDb is your first stop. So this guy had credits on IMDb. He was tweeting under his, agent alias. So there's a lot of when an agent is doing this well, at least, there's a lot of background work that needs to go into this beyond just kind of the backstory for conversations. But, political corruption, public corruption investigations are obviously very politically sensitive. And it is true that any time FBI agents are making moves or widening an investigation into an elected official – that's something that needs to be cleared at the very top of the organization. That's something that people, the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., are aware of and checking boxes on because as we're seeing here, the fallout from these types of investigations is enormous. And, you know, Ted Stevens, former Alaska senator, would point out that or would have pointed out that even if you're ultimately the case is thrown out, charges can ruin a political career. Yeah. So they want to be very careful about every step they make.
Let's take another call and then we'll come back to the whole question of politics and the fascinating question really of what Leland Yi may have thought he would be able to do as Secretary of State, which is a whole nother layer of this. But Becky in San Francisco wants to join us. Becky, go ahead.
Hi. So I was just wondering if anybody knows what the original reason for the sting to be set up was, you know, for them to send the original agents in. Did they target anyone? Did they know on what basis they began even infiltrating child organizations?
Good question, Becky. Thank you. So this takes us back again, and we talked about this some, but let's provide a little bit more context and detail because this all starts with interest in what was going on with Raymond Chow in Chinatown. Nate, pick it up.
Yeah, that's right. Alan Leung was killed in 2006. He was the former head of the Tong that we've been talking about. Shortly after his murder, Raymond Chow ascended to become the dragon head of this Tong. It turned out Alan Leung was also the head of the Hop Sing Tong in Chinatown, which is a Tong long associated with criminal activity. As a matter of fact, up and through the 80s, into the bylaws of the Hop Sing Tong, it was written that they were actually going to be facilitating illegal activities. I mean, they stated it literally in their bylaws. It's pretty incredible.
So this started out – we wind up with Leland Yi, but this started out as an investigation into organized crime in Chinatown?
Yeah, absolutely. And so following that and following Raymond's quick ascension to the Dragon Head and, of course, law enforcement have long been interested in Raymond. I mean, he goes back. He brought the Wohop Toe into the United States or help bring the Wohop Toe into the United States out of Hong Kong. I mean, so we're talking about now about international crime networks, and that was in the early 90s. So as he ascended into that position, they became interested in that. They were trying to solve that murder. And in 2010, they infiltrated his Tong, the Hung Moon Tong, And began the operation.
And so, but from there, what's still a little fuzzy to me, and Marisa or Scott jump in at this point, how this then wound up with the agent who had infiltrated Raymond Chow's organization, suggesting that there be a meeting with that Raymond Chow would suggest that, well, you know, here's a guy you need to meet, Keith Jackson, who is then the link to Leland Yee.
Yeah.
Why would that have taken place? Anyone
I mean,
know?
It seems a little murky, but just reading through the complaint, it appears that Jackson was sort of the one who was inserting himself into this world, and that sort of through the course of fundraising for Yee, he had come across these folks. I mean, but I, that's really an open question because, you know, coming from 98 or whenever when Jackson resigned from the school board through the last 15 years as he was consulting around town, I don't know that he was a political fundraiser for anybody else. And it's not entirely clear how he and Leland hooked up or exactly when that became.
Except we know that he was involved in raising money for
Leland. Right, but when did he start raising money and why did he get involved?
Yeah.
And, you know, interestingly, as I sort of mentioned before, not a single member of Leland's staff is implicated in any of this. Nobody else close to him, other political consultants. So it really does seem like there was this silo that they had created, and it seems like Jackson was really the nexus between Chow and Yee.
Becky, thanks for the question. There is so much to wade through, and we do want to note that if you want to read more about this, we've got lots more coverage on this on the KQED News website. Just go to our kqed.org/forum website. There'll be links to all of this, including a very useful thing that Scott has done, which is to sort of annotate the FBI affidavit that can point you to all the various tentacles of this story. Scott, you wanted to hop in with something?
Yeah, just going back to your point, I just pulled it up here in the complaint, and it is Jackson who initially allegedly makes the offer to the agent saying, hey, we'd like you to make contributions to this campaign. So according to this document, he's the one who started this.
Karen in Oakland has a question. Karen, go ahead.
This is Karen in Oakland. I hear you talking about the FBI agents going to Keith Jackson and saying, you know, gee, how would you go about arranging to get somebody murdered? And Keith Jackson goes, oh, we can facilitate this. And now Keith Jackson is under indictment for suggesting that he can help set up a murder for hire that was apparently the FBI's idea. This is not the first time I've heard of people being indicted on, you know, in some cases, terrorism charges. And the one that comes to my mind is the guy that was going to set off the bomb in Times Square in New York, where the whole thing was suggested to him by the FBI.
Yeah, I hear your point, Karen. Yeah. It's a good one. So I think you've got it essentially, as I understand it, right, that this was something that was brought to Keith Jackson. It wasn't like Keith Jackson was waving his arms and saying, hey, I can arrange for a murder for hire. Marisa?
No, but and I think we're going to have a far more in-depth legal analysis of the implications of entrapment and that sort of thing tomorrow in the paper. But my understanding is that essentially under the law, entrapment is when a law enforcement officer talks you into something you would have otherwise never had any interest in or done. And so, you know, Keith Jackson and his son and the people involved in this were already talking about running drugs and guns and bringing up conversations about things that I think led into this. I mean, I wasn't there. I don't know. And these are all allegations. But it does seem that there could be some legal arguments around that. But given what they're quoting these guys as saying, it's not out of the realm of possibility that this was something that the path that they were on.
Well, let's stay with this for a moment more because Ron emails in. Is Leland Yee being set up? Why did undercover agents target Yee in the first place? So, Scott, after reading the affidavit, I mean, what's your sense of that? Because he's – you know, right. And your sense of where he was with this, because you have a sense sometimes reading the affidavit that he's thinking, gee, I don't know if I should really be having this conversation, but then let's have the conversation. How would you characterize that?
The thinking behind this seems to be that, you know, let's take a step back. California has some of the toughest ethics laws of all the states in the country in terms of campaign contribution limits, in terms of how much money you can get from gifts from people, in terms of what you have to disclose. You know, a couple weeks ago, the annual reports came out where you can look through and see every single gift that somebody gave to people like Leland Yee and other lawmakers. But that system only works if you assume that the legislators are being upfront about it, if you assume that they're reporting every single gift they received. And in the Yee case, in the Calderon case, there are allegations that they were taking thousands of dollars, sometimes in cash, and not reporting it, you know, not putting into that system. So the thinking here seems to be, if there are people out there doing this, skirting the limits and the ethical requirements and the laws that we've set up, it's going to be pretty tough to catch them doing it unless you present yourself as one of the people that they seem to be doing business with. And I guess the assumption behind all of this is that if the Leland Yees and the Ron Calderones of the world are cutting these deals with undercover agents, then they're probably cutting these deals with other people and we're never finding out about it. And I think that's what's so troubling to good government type people who are wondering how a system can work, because you look at the thousands and thousands of bills that are passed and voted on all the time here in Sacramento. So many of them have these narrow interests. There's a concern of, well, how can we be sure that these types of things are happening all over the place when you have two different charges in months?
And go ahead,
Marisa. I was just going to say, and you know, this isn't the only time that folks have brought up sort of suspicious timing around donations to Yee and quite certainly many other politicians in terms of when they accept a donation and when they vote on a certain bill or issue. Also, I think we should mention that Scott said earlier, you know, a lot of these donations were well above the limits set by state and local law. But they say repeatedly that they were made in checks written out to Leland Yee, Secretary of State. So, you know, I think that's one thing that we're going to all be spending some time on is looking through his campaign reports a little more closely and going, how did they actually – did they funnel this money into his official campaign account, or was this more sort of generally money, you know, slush money that he and Jackson were using? And who knows?
There's everything from, checks made out to Leland Yee, Secretary of State.
Where did they cash those checks?
and also just envelopes of cash. But as Mark observes – and let me read a couple of emails coming in because there's some interesting point. Mark writes, I can't get over how relatively small the money involved here is. That's one of the scary parts. It is interesting when you think about it. I mean, they're talking about $5, $10, $20,000. We're not talking about millions for this kind of activity. Another listener writes, I've long believed that California politics were every bit as scary and corrupt as those back in New York and New Jersey. The difference is that back east, it's discovered more frequently because both citizens and investigative journalists pay attention. In San Francisco, it's highly impolite to kick the tires on politicians. So it's not surprising that this was unearthed by a federal investigation. I mean, that's an interesting. What do you think of that, Nate? You're in investigative journalism. Do local reporters need – should you all be more aggressive in looking into these things?
Well, I'm always for aggressive reporting. but I do also like the point that these – the numbers that we're talking about here are fairly small, because when Cha was indicted in the early 90s and he acknowledged being the head of the Wo Hop To, we're talking about huge numbers then. I mean, the amount of money that Cha was making back then was $20,000, $30,000 a day just in kickbacks from the illegal gambling dens. And the money that we're seeing in this affidavit is fairly small.
Also, these agents infiltrated a alleged criminal organization for 5 years. It took multiple agents. It took multiple people. I mean, I'd take a little offense to that. I think that we are constantly raising questions in the media, and I think that I would be surprised if in anywhere you could point to any reporter who was able to do this level of investigation, the FBI with the entire force of the United States government behind them completed.
Let's get to another caller. Neil joins us next in Palo Alto. Neil, go ahead.
A little bit tangential, but very quickly, your guest was talking about the reporting requirements, and I'm just wondering, is it the donor?
Reporting in terms of contributions, right? Is that where you're going, Neil? Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. Is there an obligation or a liability for both the donor and the donee if it's not reported, or is it just the political candidate, the recipient, that is bound by those laws? Because there'll always be a way to get around it, but I'm just wondering if there's an obligation on the contributor as well, that they face exposure for having it not reported.
Yeah. Scott, can you answer that?
You know, we're talking about a wide range of things here. By and large, the focus is usually on the lawmaker. But when it's a registered lobbyist who's breaking the rules on the giving side as well, they're also punished.
Where is this story going to go next? Does anyone know? I mean, what are you going to be looking at? I mean, Scott first, then we'll go around to each of you, because there are just so many ways this could now spread out. Scott, what are you looking for?
Right. There's the obvious political fallout. I think I'm interested in rereading the Calderon documents and trying to draw some strings between two different FBI investigations happening at the same time. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of implications, and I think this will keep us busy for a while. Not to mention, we haven't even mentioned here that Leland Yee is running for Secretary of State. What does this do to his Secretary of State campaign? I mean, Alex Padilla, the other Senate Democrat in the race, must have been one of the happiest people in Sacramento yesterday, because you have to think this ends Yee's campaign for statewide office.
One would think, and there is a reference in the affidavit where he talks about medicinal marijuana and says, well, not much can happen in terms of legislation, but as Secretary of State, that's an area in which I can have some influence. I'm paraphrasing, but that's very close to what he actually said. Where are you going next with this? What's your documentary going to be looking into, Nate Halverson?
Well, you know, I've been researching gangsters and international gangsters, Chinese gangsters, and I think the interesting thing will be to see if Raymond Chow getting arrested really has any impact on crime around the Bay Area. You know, he's been described as a current mafia head, a sort of a triad leader. Based on what's in the affidavit, I don't see we're going to see a huge dip in crime because he's now behind bars.
Right. I mean, I think that is one interesting thing. It wasn't as if this is like murder after murder and extortion after extortion.
Right.
I mean, this was a pretty focused investigation.
What's going to be in the paper tomorrow, Marissa?
Well, I mentioned I think we're going to look at sort of the legal implications. What's Leland's next move? What's Jackson's next move? What are all these folks? I mean, we're trying to contact all 26 defendants.
And four are still at large, right?
Four are still at large, so probably won't be finding them. We'll be surprised if any of the lawyers talk at this point, to be honest. And I think really pulling at these strings, you know, how did these campaign donations, where did they go? Were they in the official accounts? Who are these senators who were involved in this? What was the contract at the Department of Public Health? And then really just following how this court case unfolds, because I do think, as I said, that I would be surprised if you went to trial.
Again, you can read more about this on the KQED News site, also on our forum site. We'll have various links posted, including Scott's annotated 137-page notes on the affidavit that can walk you through this complicated—
I have more annotations to do now.
I get you do.
Did you sleep last night, Scott?
And Marissa will be writing about this as well. And Scott and Nathan will be working on an upcoming documentary with Lowell Bergman for PBS Frontline that will tie into at least some of this story. Thanks so much. Thanks for your good work on this story, and we'll be reading and learning more about it in the days ahead. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Stupai is our engagement producer. Danny Bringer is our engineer. And Dan Zalt is our senior editor. Again, you can read more about this not only in the San Francisco Chronicle, but on the KQED news site and on our forum site, where we'll have links to all of these documents and more reporting as well. I'm Dave Iverson in for Michael Krasny. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.